success. And thanking you on behalf of all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 146 to 148 of chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa ka'ayyim min nabiyyin qatala ma'ahu ribbiyyun kathir. فما وهنوا لما أصابهم في سبيل الله وما ضعفوا وما استكانوا والله يحب الصابرين وما كان قولهم إلا أن قالوا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. And how many a prophet has fought with whom were many worshippers of the Lord. So they did not become weak-hearted on account of what befell them in Allah's way, nor did they weaken, nor did they abase themselves. And Allah loves the patient. And their saying was no other than that they said, Our Lord, forgive us our faults and our extravagance in our affair. And make firm our feet and help us against the unbelieving people. So Allah gave them the reward of this world and better reward of the hereafter. And Allah loves those who do good to others.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Dozens of civilians are killed in the latest Israeli attacks in Gaza, with the total death toll surpasses 33,200. Hamas says it is studying a proposal reached in the latest round of truce talks, despite concerns over Israel's continued stubbornness. And Iraq's Islamic Resistance carries out more operations in support of Gaza, hitting several key Israeli targets in the occupied territories. Thanks for joining us. Palestinians are witnessing an endless spiral of death and devastation in Gaza, where U.S. Israeli genocide is now in its seventh month. Israeli aircraft and artillery fire continued in various parts of the Gaza Strip, targeting homes and gatherings of displaced people and killing over 30 people in the past day. The mayor of Al-Maghazi and several others were killed when the regime hit central Gaza. To the south, horrors are continuing even after Israeli occupation forces left the city of Khan Yunis on Sunday. So far, 84 bodies have been recovered from under the rubble. Palestinian medical sources say that the regime has also significantly damaged the city's hospital and equipment. Since the start of the U.S.-Israeli onslaught on October 7, over 33,200 people have been killed in Gaza. Meanwhile, aid workers have begun searching for the bodies from the rubble of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza after 2 weeks of Israeli attacks on the medical complex. According to relief teams associated with the World Health Organization, the hospital was reduced to ashes by airstrikes and shelling. Gaza Media Office said about 400 Palestinians were killed and hundreds more detained in and around the medical complex. Many patients died inside the hospital as a result of the Israeli siege on the complex. Israeli forces pulled out of Gaza's largest hospital after an intensive military operation on Monday. They laid siege to the building and carried out attacks under the pretext that Hamas fighters were operating from there. But the resistance movement has repeatedly denied having any of its fighters inside Al-Shifa or other health facilities. Some aid workers tell about the lack of equipment to pile through the rubble of Al-Shifa Hospital, where some recount the horror that they experienced at the medical complex. Let's take a listen.
الجيش الإسرائيلي أول ما دخل أول دقيقة دقيقتين ما بتعرف Once the Israeli army entered within a minute or two, they surrounded the entire area. And after that, they started using the loudspeaker to say, "This is the IDF. The entire area is surrounded and everyone must surrender." Then they started shooting at all the entrances, preventing anyone from moving. I spent 4 days there with my two little daughters, without any food or water. They cried from the hunger. And when they arrested my husband, he had not eaten for 3 days.
The relatives wish to ascertain the fate of their sons, whether they have been killed or missing or have been displaced to the south. The relatives are present to identify their sons and ensure they receive a proper burial. However, we lack the necessary equipment for this task, and time is not on our side. We must complete the job before the bodies decompose.
There are challenges in the Gaza Strip. We don't have forensic doctors or organizations that document the crimes of the Israeli occupation forces. We try to utilize the expertise of the World Health Organization and the UN Humanitarian Office in documenting the crime which occurred inside the Al-Shifa Medical Complex. The stench of death is everywhere. We try with the help of the delegation of the UN Humanitarian Office and the delegation of the World Health Organization to dig the mass graves in Al-Shifa complex and to identify the decomposed bodies and the body parts that were crushed by the Israeli occupation forces. We try to identify these bodies and document these crimes which were committed against these civilians.
Our correspondent Muti Abu Musaba joins us from Deir al-Bala to give us the latest from the Gaza Strip. What do you have for us?
Actually, the Israeli occupation forces continue their attacks and airstrikes against different parts of Gaza Strip. Let's begin from the central area of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli warplanes carried out multiple airstrikes, most importantly that airstrike that hit a residential building in Al-Maghazi refugee camp, whereas 6 Palestinian civilians, including the head of Al-Maghazi municipality, were unalived and killed by the airstrike. They were brought into cut into pieces over that attack. In the meantime, the Israeli warplanes continued their strikes against Al-Zawaida neighborhood, whereas multiple residential buildings were destroyed. And here in Deir al-Balah city, another residential building was destroyed in the central area of Deir al-Balah city. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the eastern part of the city, targeting more residential buildings in that area. Well, when it comes to Khan Yunis, as you know, that more corpses and dead bodies were extracted, as over the last 24 hours, at least 87 Palestinian dead bodies and corpses were extracted. 30 out of them were decomposed as they were left without being buried for so long time over the last couple of months. Those dead bodies are being extracted all the time, as you know that the Israeli occupation forces have been attacking Khan Yunis city for roughly 4 consecutive months. They destroyed everything, and massive destruction unfolded after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from that area. When it comes to Khan Yunis, when it comes to Rafah city, the Israeli military boats opened their heavy gunfire towards the coastal areas in the city, while the eastern parts of the city were also under heavy bombardments of the Israeli artillery shelling. Moving to Gaza city, multiple Palestinian residential neighborhoods were hit relentlessly by the Israeli airstrikes, whereas a Shijaiya neighborhood was hit as another residential building was destroyed by the Israeli warplanes. In the meantime, Zaytun neighborhood was also hit and targeted by the Israeli artillery shelling. And in the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces located in the southern part of Gaza Strip, of Gaza City, opened their gunfire towards the popular communities who were waiting for the humanitarian relief in order to secure them to reach into Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip. Even when it comes to the northern part of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes resumed their airstrikes and their incursions against different parts of that area, particularly Jabalia refugee camp, whereas more residential buildings were pounded by those Israeli airstrikes. On the other hand, we can say that the Palestinian resistance is still fighting back against the Israeli occupation forces, whereas Al-Qassam brigades announced that they have launched several mortars projectiles towards the Israeli occupation forces mobilized in the southern part of Gaza City. On the ground, as you know, that the current situation is catastrophic in terms of the humanitarian conditions, as the people are still suffering from the starvation and the deprivation of the basic humanitarian necessities, as the Israeli occupation forces are still stalling and obstructing the smooth delivery of those humanitarian needs and necessities to the people.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the discoveries that they have made, if you have that information, in Khan Yunis, of what we understand, a lot of dead bodies that have shown up? This obviously points to the fact that the figure that we keep hearing about, 70,000 or 80,000 to be under the rubble, it's showing itself up in these large numbers that were discovered in Khan Yunis, as an example.
Yes, absolutely true, given that the destruction there is massive. We can see that roughly 80% of the residential buildings and facilities were completely or partially destroyed. This reflects that there is hundreds of the Palestinian civilians are still trapped and missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses. And this means that the number of the Palestinian civilians who were killed over the attack will be massive. And as you know, that the civil defense crews, they are searching for those dead bodies, and they are trying to extract those dead bodies, having their basic tools, and they are using their bare hands in order to extract those dead bodies. So this actually complicates the process, and this complicates the extraction of those dead bodies. We can see that what happened in Khan Yunis is unprecedented in terms of the massive destruction and the mass slaughter of the people there. And even when it comes to Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip, the destruction that was inflicted in those areas by the Israeli occupation forces is nothing compared to what happened and took place in Khan Yunis City. What happened in Khan Yunis City is horrific, because as you know, that everything was breached by the Israeli occupation forces was targeted and destroyed. This included actually the residential buildings, the infrastructure, the pipelines, and everything. Everything was targeted and destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. Apparently, the Israeli occupation forces were driven by the desire of vengeance against Khan Yunis City, basically. Over to you.
Thank you for that. Muti Abu Musaba there from Deir Rabbala. Thank you, Muti. Moving on, the Palestinian Resistance Movement Hamas says the proposal reached during the latest round of Gaza ceasefire talks does not meet the movement's and the Palestinians' demands. Hamas says Israel's position in the negotiations held in Egypt remains stubborn. The movement, however, said that it is still studying the proposal and will inform mediators of its response once it is completely reviewed. Hamas did not set any time frame for its response. The movement says that it wants a comprehensive ceasefire that would see the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and the return of Gazans to their homes. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is a main topic as well. The Cairo talks were attended by delegations from Israel, Hamas, Qatar, and the United States. The Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement says that Iran has every right to retaliate the recent Israeli attack on its embassy in Syria.
In the end, the Americans have come to the conclusion that there will be a reaction. Even the Israelis, they have come to this conclusion. They have recognized that there will be, I think the whole world has, that this is a natural right for Iran, and that it's normal for the Islamic Republic to go ahead with such a retaliation. But, of course, everyone's waiting what will happen and the repercussions of what will happen.
Nasrullah made the comments in a ceremony held in the commemoration of Iranian Major General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, who was killed along with a number of his companions in Damascus. The Hezbollah chief said that Israel's stupidity in attacking the Iranian embassy made the U.S. president press Israel to stop the onslaught on Gaza. Nasrullah said that Israel has achieved nothing on the ground in Gaza in the past 6 months and has no choice but to stop the genocidal war. Nasrullah also cited Israel's deteriorating situation in the world and its isolation due to its aggression against Palestinians. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has visited Syria a week after the Israeli attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus. He met with President Bashar al-Assad and Syria's Foreign Minister to discuss the latest developments. Ibrahim Wahdi reports from Damascus.
In a significant visit as part of his regional tour, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus this Monday. Amir Abdullahian met with President Bashar al-Assad, who considered the Israeli attack against the Iranian embassy and the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza a proof of Israel's failure in achieving any military objectives. Amir Abdullahian highlighted that the Israeli regime is facing its worst times due to the Palestinian resistance, which stands ready to continue its battle against Israel's atrocities.
I have discussed with President Bashar al-Assad the series of events, especially the events in Palestine and the crime that Israel committed against the Iranian consulate in Damascus. This terrorist crime was committed with US-made fighter jets and missiles. Therefore, the US is involved. Israel will receive the due response for its aggression against our consulate in Damascus.
Amir Abdullahian and his Syrian counterpart Faisal al-Maqdad inspected the Iranian consulate struck by the Israeli regime. They later inaugurated the new Iranian consulate in Syria.
The Israeli aggression against the Iranian consulate in Damascus is a violation of international law and all values on which humanity was founded. The Israeli enemy tries to expand the war due to its complete failure in Gaza. Syria firmly supports the resistance in Gaza and all the resistance movements in the region.
The Iranian foreign minister also stressed that Iran will spare no efforts to stop the genocidal war in Gaza, support its resistance, and deliver humanitarian aid. He concluded his visit at Muassa Hospital to check in on the wounded of the Israeli aggression and express his heartfelt thoughts. This visit comes within the context of Iran's diplomatic efforts to stop the Israeli onslaught in Gaza, and also to reaffirm Iran's right of retaliation for the Israeli heinous crime against the Iranian embassy. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Iraqi resistance groups say that they have carried out fresh military operations against five vital Israeli targets, retaliation for the regime's massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. The Islamic resistance in Iraq says the targets hit include the Ascalon oil port and Hadzerim air base in the city of Beersheba. The Umbrella Resistance Group also vowed to continue targeting enemy strongholds. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli targets. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's complicity in the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Hamas has called on countries across the world to follow the examples of Nicaragua and South Africa in taking action against the Gaza genocide committed by Israel with Western support. In a statement, the Palestinian resistance movement expressed appreciation for a case filed by Nicaragua against Germany at the International Court of Justice. The lawsuit says Berlin is facilitating genocide in Gaza and demands emergency measures to stop it from supplying weapons to Israel. South Africa had also earlier brought a genocide case against Israel at the top UN court. Hamas says Nicaragua, South Africa, and similar countries are refusing to close their eyes to the worst crime of the contemporary era taking place in Gaza. The Palestinian Resistance Movement also called on the ICJ to stop ignoring Israeli atrocities and to issue firm decisions to end the genocide in Gaza. Journalist and commentator Sondos Al-Assad joined us earlier from Beirut. She believes that only the U.S. is capable of ending the Gaza war.
The only way that will help the Palestinians is in archiving these crimes and these atrocities and ruining the image of the Zionist occupation and the American administration. But we know that such international bodies like the Criminal Investigation Court and others, they are ineffective and impotent because they are directed and moderated by these Western governments. So yes, it's for the part of exposing the Zionist crimes before the international community. It's something significant, but as I have mentioned earlier, I don't think that they will help the Palestinians and stop this genocide. Because the only one that can stop this genocide is the American administration, but the American administration want and has no will to stop this aggression and this genocide.
And that does it with this edition of World News. Thank you for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
In the limelight.
Israel and its cult in the United States have used every means to break the spirit of Palestinian defiance and to make Palestine a permanent colony of the Zionist regime. Washington has been a willful partner in the Zionist regime's schemes. The Al-Aqsa storm operation and the resistance it has generated have proven both delusional. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "For many in positions of power and influence, common sense has been supplanted with Zionist mythical ideology and a cultish belief in heroic Israeli leaders, noble warriors, and peacemakers. Ever since European Zionists invaded the land of Palestine, Israel has made the indigenous people prisoners and refugees in their own land. Why? Until now, have their colonization and imprisonment received so little attention in the United States? Why has the nation that birthed the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence been willing to dismantle the long-established rules, norms, and standards of international law and risk a wider war in the West Asia region so that the apartheid regime of Israel can complete its goal of physically destroying the indigenous population of Palestine to create a Jewish-only state? Why do individuals in and out of government who have seen in real time the carnage in Gaza continue to defend the indefensible and remain bound to Israel?" The Zionist regime has been waging an ideological war on the truth since it declared itself a state in 1948. it has invested heavily, particularly in the United States, to manufacture a legitimacy it does not have, to embed the myth that Israel is a small yet brave and vulnerable democratic state that deserves U.S. support no matter the cost. Until the October 7th operation by Hamas and other resistance groups, Israel had succeeded in establishing a gallery of cultish faithful in the United States who have effectively controlled the narrative and silenced dissenting voices. If we are to accept the Merriam-Webster dictionary as great devotion to a person, idea, object, movement, or work, then the relationship between the United States and the Zionist regime can accurately be described as cultish. The Zionist regime's mythical narrative has seeped into the thinking and vocabulary of American politicians, academics, Christian ministers, mainstream media, and finally most Americans. Consequently, for many in positions of power and influence, common sense has been supplanted with Zionist mythical ideology and a cultish belief in heroic Zionist leaders, Nobel warriors, and peacemakers. There are no Palestinians in the Israeli story. The mantra of the Zionist regime, a land without people for a people without land, which reflects the belief of Israel's Zionist founders that Palestinians are not people, is a myth held today by most Jewish Israelis and by many in the United States of America. The Zionist regime's advocates are in some ways similar to former President Donald Trump's Make America Great Again disciples, who have been referred by some as a cult. Presented with overwhelming evidence of Trump's crimes and grift, they have remained loyal. After hundreds of reports, like that of Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and B'Tselem, documenting the Zionist regime's 76-year history of land theft, apartheid, oppression, torture, and genocide of Palestinians, Israel's loyalists remain steadfast. In 1983, after the condemnation it received for its disastrous invasion of Lebanon in 1982, the Zionist regime stepped up its propaganda campaign. The goal of what came to be known as Hasbara propaganda project was to guarantee that America never wavered in its political, economic, and military support, and to make it next to impossible to critique Israel's actions. The Zionist regime has cynically wielded the cudgel of anti-Semitism to quash criticism. The threat of punishment, of being labeled anti-Semitic, looms over those who dare to question or challenge the ideology. It has been a fatally effective dissuader, an accusation that has destroyed the careers and reputations of many journalists, academics, entertainers, and politicians. Helen Thomas, for example, a respected member of the Washington Press Corps, had her 57-year career end after she publicly questioned U.S. support for the Zionist regime. An onslaught of well-orchestrated denunciations forced her retirement in 2010. Thomas later remarked, "You cannot criticize Israel in this country and survive." Popular host of a weekly MSNBC program, Mehdi Hassan, is a recent example of a journalist punished for making Palestinians visible to a national audience and for daring to criticize the Zionist regime. After 3 years on the air, the cable news network announced in November 2023 that his program would be canceled. Corporate news organizations like MSNBC have come to expect immense pressure if they go outside the level of acceptable discourse regarding Israel. They have therefore eschewed the Palestinian narrative and have become essentially an arm of Tel Aviv's propaganda network. Israeli Hasbara has also framed Palestinian resistance against military occupation as terrorism. The association of terrorism with Palestinians, Muslims, and the West Asia region has created an unhealthy climate of indifference and dispassion among many Americans, an indifference that has made the televised genocide of Palestinians acceptable. Just another news event.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens. Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Muslims across the world have spent the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan marking Al-Quds Day. The day was designated by Imam al-Khomeini, who commanded Muslims to institute this day in order to always keep the cause of Palestine fresh in the hearts and minds of Muslims everywhere. This episode will discuss Al-Quds Day, in particular in the context of the extra importance it takes with regards to the current genocidal war Israel is waging on the people of Palestine. First, we take a look at the ideology of Imam Khomeini with regards to Palestine and what drove him to institute Al-Quds Day.
The Zionist occupation of Palestine was preceded by the injection of the poison of nationalism, a concept totally alien to the Quranic concept of the Ummah, the single faith community. The ideology of Arab nationalism fragmented the Muslim masses when they were confronted by Zionist nationalism in a conflict over control of Palestine, as they could only be mobilized on the basis of Islam, not on the basis of an alien ideology imported from the West. The Western powers pursued a long-term strategy, first defeating the Ottoman Empire and then planting their agents in the fragmented body of the Ummah in the Global South. Muslims ended up with traitorous rulers who were nurtured by the colonialist powers and are therefore loyal to them. David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, candidly admitted that the Arab regimes are Israel's first line of defense. These regimes have continued to suppress the Islamic movement. It was in this grim situation that the Islamic Revolution succeeded in Iran in 1979. Soon thereafter, Imam Khomeini, as the first truly Islamic leader to emerge in the Ummah in the post-colonial period, took a number of decisions that had far-reaching implications. The Islamic State severed all links with the Zionist state and expelled its agents from Iran. The Imam then proclaimed that only the mobilization of Muslim masses would liberate the first Qibla of Islam from the clutches of Zionism. Towards this end, he declared that the last Friday of Ramadan should be marked as Yawm al-Quds, the Day of Al-Quds, on which Muslims throughout the world should reaffirm their determination and commitment to end the continued occupation of Al-Quds and Palestine by the Zionist invaders. Imam Khomeini located the struggle of the Muslim masses in the very roots of Islam, in the month of Ramadan, where Muslims worldwide not only fast together, but also congregate over the recitation of the Word of God and the remembrance of significant Islamic history and victories like that of Badr. By observing the Day of Al-Quds, Muslims not only begin to fulfill a political obligation, they also acknowledge a religious one. The protection of Islam's sacred places is a duty that is incumbent upon all Muslims. As long as Al-Quds remains in the clutches of Zionism, this duty remains unfulfilled, and mobilizing the Muslim Ummah toward this objective becomes a religious obligation.
Now, to discuss this important topic are two very special guests. We're honored to welcome Masood Shajara. Brother Masood is the chair of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, which organizes legal support for Muslims targeted by the state. The IHRC has been one of the organizers of the annual Quds Day in London for several decades. I'm also honored to welcome back Sister Noor Fekri to the show. Sister Noor is a politics graduate with a keen interest in West Asian affairs. She uses her social media platform to analyze religious and political events in a way that is accessible to the everyday person. Assalamu alaikum to you both. Thank you for joining us here to discuss what is a really momentous day in the Islamic world and wider, actually. Sister Noor, if I could begin with you. Firstly, we just heard there some of the context behind why Imam Khomeini did establish Quds Day, and I wanted to ask you, like, why did he make such efforts? What was he worried about in terms of perhaps Muslims forgetting the importance of Palestine during that era?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly don't think he thought people would forget Palestine. If you look around today and ask people about Palestine, absolutely everyone is aware of what is going on in Palestine. So I think the Imam actually had an incredible ability of basira, being able to see into the future and foresee that actually people will remember. Al-Quds Day then, we could say 40 years ago, could have been established in order to remind people then, because then the Palestine folder had been put onto the shelves, gathering dust. There were peace agreements that were being made, failed Oslo Accords, constant failed agreements, as though you can agree with the colonizer, as though you can negotiate with the colonizer. And people were starting to forget the Palestinian issue. But he brought it back onto the list of priorities. He made it a top priority. He removed the Israeli occupation entity embassy from Tehran and erected a Palestinian embassy. He recognized Palestine as a state, which is significant, as one state recognizing another. And so back then, he made people remember it through Al-Quds Day. However, today, he made it a reoccurring event, so it's something that happens every single Ramadan, which is, by the way, Islam's holiest month, and on a Friday, which is Islam's holiest day, to unite people in the future. It wasn't necessarily to remind them. And through this unity, he attempted to unite Muslims to counter the sectarianism that the West tried to sort of get people to occupy themselves with. So, for instance, they would occupy people's minds by telling them that Palestinians are Sunnis, and why should Shia Lebanese or Shia Iranians or Zaydi Yemenis defend Palestine? So he, with Al-Quds Day, destroyed the idea of sectarianism and united people through the banner of Palestine in Islam.
Absolutely. And Brother Masood, as the sister rightly mentioned there, you know, there have been attempts to, which persist to this day, to stress and focus on sectarian differences maybe that appear. But, you know, the status of Al-Quds is quite central in Islam itself. What is it about Al-Quds exactly that makes it so important to the religion of Islam and to Muslims around the world?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I mean, the obvious is that it was the first Qibla of Muslims and is one of the holiest sites in Islam. And but I think it goes far beyond that. I mean, what the sister said is absolutely right about the importance of Al-Quds and why it was instigated. I'm old enough to remember it at the time. At that time, the struggle for freedom of Palestine was being shifted between the East and the West. You know, people were going towards Americans and for trying to get Palestinians free, or another group of people, or a few years later they were going towards communism mm-hmm. as a solution. And Imam Khomeini at that time, when there was no single International Day of Remembrance of plight of the Palestinians, establish Al-Quds Day as an Islamic solution to the problems of region. And I think that was really significant because it sort of clarified, and it's even the significance of it right now is the same, that yes, it is this holy place, yes, it's very important, but what is the solution? The solution is resistance. The solution is actually removal of Zionism and oppression as an ideology, and the solution needs to be defined by the people who are living there. And I think this is what makes Al-Quds Day even very important now, because what we are saying very clearly that people in Palestine, the oppressed people, people who are facing the greatest genocide of our time, have got the right and indeed the duty to resist against it under international law, under any moral values or basis. And that is the solution. And the solution at the end of it is remove, not just, just make Israel a smaller place or larger place. Mm. Actually, like South Africa, the apartheid needs to be removed. Mm. Apartheid cannot be reformed. And that is the basis of this. And I think it's very important that this voice is heard every year at the month of Ramadan, because it's an Islamic solution that actually gives platform to not just Muslims fighting others. It's actually giving empowerment to Muslims, Christians and others to become the masters of their future in occupied Palestine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Ramadan element is so important, and it highlights the basira of Imam al-Khomeini, because it's when Muslims are most engaged and focused on the communal aspect and maybe have a higher sense of spiritualism.
I mean, but if you actually think that the whole month we fast to become a better human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we look at this this sort of state, which is not just endangering Palestinians, but endangering humanity.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sake, this is not just about saving Palestinians. If we go down this route of legitimizing these genocide, the whole of the humanity is at danger. And I think if the whole month of Ramadan, we don't think about this, we don't find a solution to this, we don't become part of that solution, then what's the point of fasting the whole
absolutely.
Month?
Sister Noor, how does Al-Quds Day take extra significance this year in particular?
I think it takes extra significance for obvious reasons. I mean, there's a literal genocide taking place, even thinking about what they're doing to the Palestinian people. I mean, I can't stop trembling thinking about them bombing buildings and killing babies. And it's just incredibly disgusting. It is out of this world disgusting what they're doing to the Palestinian people. So I think naturally this year is going to be extra significant for us because we're going to be with Palestine in our hearts, minds and prayers. But when we're talking about sort of the significance of Al-Quds Day in general, I think Brother Masoud really touched on the idea of resistance. It is the slogan, Al-Quds is the slogan of the resistance movement. If you think about Iran, for example, they have a branch of their military called Al-Quds Force. The Lebanese, they call themselves martyrs for Al-Quds. The Yemenis, you know, they've been bombing US ships in the sea all for Al-Quds. So it really unites people. But I think when we're talking about the significance this year, the main important point that I've really realized is this shift in narrative from people. And we were seeing influencers like Subhi, I'm sure you've seen him on Instagram, who has hundreds of thousands of followers. And his post went viral where he said, you know what, I support the resistance. Enough is enough of us sort of setting empty Free Palestine chants with nothing to back it up. And I think that's really what Al-Quds Day stands for. It stands for the people that really support resistance. And that's what's becoming prominent. People want to join that caravan of truth this year. And they don't want to be left behind.
Absolutely. And it's probably for that reason why Al-Quds Day is targeted the way it is. In that context, we could take a look at some of the Al-Quds Days of years gone by and look at the incidents of violence and oppression that have been meted out against those believers who attend these events.
Ever since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan has been designated as Quds Day as per the orders of the late Imam Khomeini. But the day has seen a number of major incidents take place, as it has become a target for tyrants, Zionists and terrorists the world over. In 1985, during the Iran-Iraq War, Iranians were commemorating Quds Day in Iran when bombers and long-range missiles sent by Saddam's regime struck 14 Iranian cities, killing at least 78 people. In 2010, in Quetta, Pakistan, a suicide bomber attacked Pakistani Shias holding a Quds Day rally. The Pakistani Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack, which killed at least 65 people and wounded 160. In 2012, as the Persian Gulf Kingdom of Bahrain was roiled by ongoing anti-government protests, that year's Quds Day was also met with deadly force by British-trained security forces, and one man was killed. Then in 2014 came one of the most pivotal events in the history of Al-Quds Day. In Zaria, Nigeria, where the leader of the Islamic movement, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, is based, the Nigerian army opened fire on the Quds Day rally and killed 35 people, including three of Sheikh Zakzaki's sons. This was followed by another massacre the following year that killed over 1,000 followers of the Islamic movement, including another three of the Sheikh's sons, and led to the kidnapping of him and his wife and hundreds of other followers by the Nigerian regime. Despite the targeting of those who attend the annual Quds Day march across the world, the continued presence of millions of people shows both the foresight of Imam Khomeini and the enduring nature of the cause of Al-Quds in the hearts.
Now, Brother Masoud, we heard about some examples there. Can you expand on a few of those examples of Muslims and others being, you know, attacked and killed on this specific day?
Yes, I think the fact of the matter is that it's been targeted, by the Zionists, targeted by those who actually want to undermine the empowerment of Muslims to rise up against this one of the institutions of Zionism, which is actually killing and committing all these crimes. Zaria sort of attack was horrible. I went to Zaria just after that attack and investigated. It was said that three of the sheikh's children were killed in that attack. One was killed in that attack. Two of them were picked up and assassinated in an army base afterward, and many others who died out of 28 were killed deliberately, assassinated. You know, we don't have to go far. Osborne, who attacked an individual outside Finsbury Park Mosque, he came to London targeting Al-Quds Day, and he actually failed to reach the Al-Quds demonstration on time, and that's why he changed his plan and targeted the Finsbury Park Mosque. In court hearing, the judge said, "You, a horrible man, came to London to target a demonstration of innocent people, family and children, a peaceful demonstration." So really it's been seen that this demonstration is a demonstration of ordinary people standing up for what is just, what is fair, and what is necessary, because to stop this genocide taking place must be the duty of every one of us. And at the same time, we are seeing that those who are coming to London and elsewhere, they're coming from the Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and indeed secular background. Those who are targeting it is also axis of evil. There are Zionists, there are sort of Iranian pro-Shah claiming to be democratic and so forth and so on. So there is what we see very clearly.
And so you mentioned Jewish as well, and that community that come to Al-Quds Day and support Palestine and the Torah Charter, they are a small but vocal group of Jewish clerics, if you will, who support the rights of the Palestinian people. They've also been attacked within their own community.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember one of the rabbis was punched so violently, and he was bleeding quite, and the police was doing nothing about it. And they're being attacked day in, day out. I think I have to say this. It's not just rabbis. Mm. There's a huge number of Jewish community that's coming forward. And they're really the heroes of the time, because it's not easy for them to come out and say, not in our name. You know, it really is. It goes against all the publicity and propaganda which has been done. And they're being targeted themselves. They've been arrested being anti-Semitic, you know, and so forth and so on. So really, I think we need to recognize the bravery of everyone that is coming on a day like this to stand for what is right, what is just, and what is necessary to end this evil of genocide that is taking place.
Absolutely. Sister Noor, the British regime has been talking about cracking down on the pro-Palestinian movement and protests in general. This is an attempt that obviously thus far has failed miserably. It's seen Suella Braverman, the previous Home Secretary, lose her job. Do you expect there to be a rise in attempts to ban or could stay going forward?
I mean, they've attempted to ban it every single year. They've come up with nonsense to ban every single year. First it's a political movement, then it's a flag, then it's the colour of the flag. They've come with something new to ban every single year, and they will attempt to ban Al-Quds Day in particular. I mean, we should ask ourselves, why is it that they have to take such issue with Al-Quds Day? Why do they not mind? I mean, we've had over 12 Saturdays in a row of national Palestine demos with, at some point, it reaching almost a million people in attendance. And they didn't seem to have an issue with that. I mean, they did say, you know, their hate marches, etc., but they didn't try to ban it. With Al-Quds Day, they take particular sort of interest in banning that because they know that it represents resistance. And when we talk about resistance, it represents the type of resistance like the resistance in Lebanon that pushed back the Israeli occupation entity 7 kilometers back into the occupied territory, occupied Palestinian territory. It destroyed over, you know, 1,000 of their sort of intelligence apparatus on the border. We're talking about the resistance in Yemen that, you know, their honorable slippers have, you know, they've fought in their slippers and they've bombed ships in the sea. And so it's that type of resistance that stands in the face of these arrogant powers that they fear so badly. I mean, we're looking at the reality on the ground. The Israeli occupation entity has lost the war. They've lost. We're just waiting for that ceasefire to happen so that we can all go out and celebrate. The point is, the US is so worried about this burden that they now have, which is the Israeli occupation entity, and they're trying as hard as they can to just find an end out of this conflict. And it's evident in their confusion. First they vote for a ceasefire, then they don't vote for a ceasefire. They're just confused, and they're going to, once the ceasefire is declared, they're going to slap that genocidal child of theirs, which is the Israeli occupation entity, in the face and discipline it. But in the meantime, they need to find a solution, which is the two-state solution that they keep pushing. And Al-Quds Day and people that come to Al-Quds Day is exactly what opposes that. We don't want no two-state solution. We support resistance. That's what Al-Quds Day is all about.
Absolutely. We were speaking earlier, Brother Masood, about the kind of people that come and oppose Al-Quds Day. Like we said, we've seen those Zionists, we've seen Iranian traitors, if you will, those who are willing to support the people who are attacking and bombing their own country. We've seen these like racist, far-right Zionist groups like the EDL and others in years gone by. Is that not a sign that somebody might be on the right side of history?
Right. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I remember Majid Nawaz one year was standing with Al-Quds and saying Israel doesn't have the right of existence. Then with a bit of a few dollars, they actually managed to get him to go on to their side and to support and said that Al-Quds should be banned and people who are saying this sort of thing. So really, I think that is happening, as is clearly pathetic in some ways, 25, 30 of them managing get together to come and oppose and try to force their agenda. Why they do it is very clear. What Al-Quds stand for is not just a peace and hugging or a two-state solution and illusions that has created the genocide of today. Yeah. And what it does is actually address it, gives the, it stands for, as the sister said, for resistance, which is recognized under international law, and sees that is a solution, and the solution comes with defeat of the Zionist ideology, which is creating the problem to start with. The problem with some other demonstration is that, you know, we seem to be resetting the time every time, you know, and we forget the whole history and the disease of ideology of Zionism that is creating the problem. You want the solution, you have to get rid of that. We got rid of apartheid in South Africa, people start living their lives together, white, black, and others. In Palestine, occupied Palestine, we want a solution. We have to get rid of Zionism so Jews, Muslims, Christians, and others could begin to have a future. And I think that is what is being opposed. The totality of a solution, not just for that region, but for everywhere else, that you need to get rid of these demonizing ideologies that is putting otherization and putting people against each other to have a future. And I think what's different between, in short, different between Al-Quds demonstration and others is that in Al-Quds demonstration, nobody is waiting in the illusion that the United Nations or the U.S. cavalry is going to come at the 11th hour with the trumpets and save the day for the Palestinians. Palestinians and others have to stand up and through resistance and by their freedom and their dignity.
Absolutely. Sister Noor, just the last question, if you will. Are you planning to attend Al-Quds Day? And if you are, what message would you have for others that perhaps are thinking about going or maybe haven't previously attended in the past?
I mean, I'll tell people that if you've ever been to any other Palestine, pro-Palestine march, and you've gone and you've seen people that are holding FSA flags, or you've seen someone that's calling for a two-state solution, or somebody doesn't even know why they're there, that's common because that's, you know, they don't have an actual goal. Whereas Al-Quds Day has a goal. It's pro-resistance, it's pro-solutions, as Brother Masoud has said. So I do encourage everyone to attend Al-Quds Day if you really do want to see a way out of this genocide that is taking place right now.
Absolutely. Thank you to you both for joining us on this important episode about a day and an event which, as we've discussed at length today, is really important in reviving that spirit of the Muslims and focusing on a specific goal, as opposed to, you know, a kind of chaotic approach we've seen, as you just mentioned there, with other protests. So thank you for your